Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, your shirt's my hero.
I'm glad you like it. I figured, considering the topic today, that the shirt would explain a lot more and support my talk a bit more. So I guess let's get started. If people are still filtering in from lunch, well, more than merrier. My name is Sarah Dukavich, and I'm going to talk to you guys about keeping an open mind about open source. Now, I remember watching the open source movement back when I was in college almost a decade and a half ago, and thinking, this is a cool little movement. I'm curious to see where it will go in a few years. And I'm like, but there are certain things that were attached to it back then, and I'm like, is that really still true now? And doing some research, a lot of things that I remember from back then, some people still think that those myths are true. And so today I'm going to hopefully shatter those myths for you a little bit, and show you what other packages are out there. And if you have questions at all along the way, feel free to ask. So, open source. When you think of open source, at least to me, when I personally think of open source, I think of SourceForge. Because back, we're talking like mid to late 90s, I was sitting in the dorm room somewhere, had a Slackware or Linux box, I was trying to figure out what cool things were out there. I remember going to SourceForge to download a tarball of some sort and install it that way. Free Software Foundation, both of those have been around since what, 80s, 90s. So people are like, oh, open source movement sounds fairly young. No, not even close. So we've got something a little bit older. How many of you guys have heard of the UNIVAC 1? Good to see hands. So the UNIVAC 1, they shipped a system called the A2 system. When they shipped that out, the A2 system also had the code. And they would ship the code out to their customers for the A2 system and said, here, install this, and give us any feedback so that we can improve it upon it. So you have your first thing at open source a lot earlier than the mid-80s and mid-90s. Because, I mean, today, how many of you guys have actually programmed on a UNIVAC? Yeah, that's what I thought. I can't admit to doing that either. I wasn't around when this happened, but this is pretty cool to see that open source. They thought about it early on. All right, Linux versus Windows. How many Windows users here? Yay, I'm not alone. Thanks, guys. I can remember back in college, people were just like, oh, it's always going to be Linux is better than Windows. Windows is better than Linux. Blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, stop the fighting. There's no need to fight. Why can't we just all get along? And nowadays, it's not just Linux and Windows. I mean, really, there's this thing called a Macintosh, a few other things out there. Some of you see XKCD? I saw this, and I had to include it. It just cracked me up. It talks about how you've got these Microsoft, what do they call them? The Microsoft latch are jumping in on Richard Stallman. And they're just like, yeah, they're like, your open source licenses have grown too powerful. We got to take you down, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you Microsoft lackeys, it's come to this. And he declares war, and they're like, yeah, no, let's move on and go somewhere else. They're like, this is too fun. It's not about Linux and Windows. It's not about Richard Stallman versus the Microsoft lackeys, or Linus Torvalds, as I mentioned in the next frame. No. He's got more friends and enemies in here as well. So it's Linux, it's Windows, it's Mac, it's Android, it's BSD. It's, you name the platform, there's probably open source out there for it. It's not just this closed niche club of, hey, let's do this cool project and not share it with anybody. No. It's share everywhere. And there's some that will even go cross-platform. So it's not just a let's fight with each other. It's a let's be friends as well. Then there's that myth that you have to have a beard and sandals. Now looking at the audience, I don't see a lot of beards.
I have sandals and no beard for that.
Well, and that's, if it were a little warmer, I'd be in the sandals crowd, but I can grow a beard to handle life. I wasn't blessed with that's probably a good thing. So like, Mad Dog, I can't compete with him. I can't compete with some of these guys are on the linuxbeards.com. So if you haven't seen the site, that's where some of these guys came from. But yeah. You don't have to have a beard and sandals. If you have to have a beard to succeed in this industry, then I have no business being where I am today. In fact, why does have no business done if you have to have a beard? He doesn't have a beard. Have any of you guys seen a picture of him with a beard? I mean, he can't compete with anybody. Poor guy. creates an operating system and can compete with us. But then there are these other people as well. So we've got over down here, Mark Spencer, creator of Asterisk. We've got the nice keynote coming from him tomorrow. We've got Kristen McCarty, she's up here. She's done some kernel development. She does some of the stuff that I consider hardcore. Anything that's dealing with like writing the code for hardware. Crazy stuff. She's awesome with that. We've got Dorothy Gordon. Dorothy Gordon deals with some of the stuff in the open source realm as well. All of these actually do. So, I mean, you don't have to have a beard, you don't have to have sandals, and you can still be successful in the open source realm. Now, how many of you guys thought open source was a fringe movement? It isn't. It really isn't. These guys here, so we've got, of course, Linus. Everybody knows him. We've got the guy from BSD. We've got this guy here, Jim Hugan, and he's the father of JoyCon and IronPython, which are open. And Phil Hack is, he worked with NuGet, which is on the Microsoft side. There's a lot of open source packages you can install from there. He's now currently at GitHub. But you see these, it's like, okay, you've got these guys in the community. But it's a lot more than just a few people in the community. You've got corporations that are also embracing open source, be it embracing it to the point of creating software, or embracing it to the point of using it or promoting it. And these are just some of the companies that are out there today in the open source movement. So we've got Fujitsu, Hitachi, Microsoft, Apple. I mean, we're talking big names. IBM, Intel, you name it, they're in there. You even got car manufacturers like Toyota, you got Panasonic. So you name it, it's not necessarily just your laptop people or your desktop people. You also have your database people, your cars, all sorts of industries are in the open source world. And in terms of what these corporations are doing, some of the places where you can find them. For Microsoft, their primary open source contributions can be seen on CodePlex.com. How many of you have heard of CodePlex? Good to see some hands. Awesome. How about, have you guys heard of Mac OS Forge? Couple? Okay. That's where the Apple's open source pushes were for the longest time. Other places, we'll talk about those in a bit here. But yeah, a lot of people are like, well, Microsoft, Apple, where do they contribute? That's where their strong contributions are. Now, antisocial developers. How many of you guys are developers? Okay, the fact that you guys are here and not in a dark, closeted room, I mean, that shattered it right then and there. You guys probably have, like, maybe had lunch with somebody in this room or have talked to somebody somewhere here. You're social. I hate to tell you guys this, but you're social. You're not antisocial. You're here amongst other fellows. It's fun. But a lot of people think open source, antisocial, and for me, that always boggles my mind. How can you be an open source project, sharing your code with people, sharing your code probably with the world, so I'm talking to everybody, and then I'm antisocial and keeping myself? That doesn't add up, number one. And then I'm not on a project by myself, I'm probably working with other developers. How many of you worked on a team with another developer to do the same goal, work together and not ever talk to each other? We're saying no email, no text, no IM, none of that stuff, and found yourself to be successful. It just doesn't happen. You have to have that communication. Again, that means you're not antisocial. That means you are forced to be social in that way. The fact of the matter is, developers, we have to collaborate. For me, I'm a developer in my background, and I work with all sorts of teams, small teams, big teams. I don't care either way. But I love working with people. And seeing this is just like, this makes sense. If you notice with this, these are different open source packages. And you can see, like, for example, VLC and some of the people who are collaborating on that. Over here, we've got who's contributing to Rails over on GitHub. And then over here, this is the group that has contributed to the Sunlight Toolkit over on CodePlex. So notice that we're looking at different communities. But they all have a lot of contributors that are all working together to make a package that they really care about, that they want people to use. I mean, if you think about open source packages, if you're even contributing them, you want your package to be successful. You want people to use it and to give feedback so that you can improve upon it. You have to be social in order to do that. Then there's that whole myth that open source is unreliable. And it's like, really? Open source is really unreliable? Just because it's open, people are like, oh, if it's open, people can write whatever garbage code they want. It'll be electric quality code, it's not well maintained, it's more buggy than a lot of the commercial counterparts. It's like, really? More buggy? I mean, seriously, closed source fails too. I mean, you get stuff like this. So, if closed source fails, you can't say, oh, open source is going to fail because it's open. How do you explain something like this? Really? In all honesty, open source is quite reliable. Yeah, I had to put the blue screen in to make that point. No, it wasn't a real blue screen. But I have been in presentations where I've gotten a random blue screen or a random error message appear on a closed source operating system. Open source is actually quite reliable. And the screenshot that I have here is from a Linux server, and this was taken a while back, and it was up 123 days. We had a server back in college. I got something, sorry, my husband's sitting here, so when I say we, he's done here. It was a 486, and we called it Flash, because it was awesome at the time. So we're talking, late 90s or so? And it had about 400 days of uptime before we actually had to shut it down. Well, the reason why we were shutting it down is because we had to move. So, yeah. Linux and open source in general can be quite reliable if you just let it be and let it do its job like it's supposed to. I haven't met a Windows machine that has had over 400 days uptime. So that guy sets the bar pretty high. Then there's that whole myth of there's no support behind open source. Sure, you've got people who are developing it, but let's say I'm a corporation who wants to adopt your open source project. Okay, so we're using your open source project, but I need support and I need support right now. What am I going to do? They're worried that there's no support, or you get something like Adobe come at the other end. Or maybe you get this guy. How many of you guys have seen this guy as your support guy? Yeah. The thing is, we get this support guy on closed systems as well, or pet or hardware. How many times have you called a Dell rep and you feel like you're talking to this? Point. But the thing is, open source projects, they don't lack support. If you run into a Peggy like this, we have to wonder about that package sometimes. But the thing is that this is the kind of stuff that you're going to see when you're dealing with open source. You might have things here, like these green buttons. Those are from the CodePlex site. Notice they have an issue tracker. So if you've got an open source package from CodePlex, and you're not too sure why certain thing isn't working like you'd expect it, you can check to see if there's an outstanding issue. And if you can duplicate it and say, no, it's really the bug, you can file an issue. There's documentation. Of course, whether the people actually documented or not may be a different story. We can only hope that one day we'll have projects documented nicely. But it's there for some of them. Discussion. So you know you're not the only one using that open source package. If you post in the discussion, somebody else may see that and go, oh, you know what? I had that problem. And that thing that you're not too sure how it works, this is what I did to get it to work the way that we need it. So that's there. I mean, so you've got collaboration with the people who are using this. The issue tracker, at that point, the developers who are working on this and are also seeing this, will most likely interact with you. So your support, the one thing I like about open source is your support typically, if you're dealing with like little packages, you're dealing directly with the developer. You're dealing directly with the people who are creating this, people who can make that change. You're not dealing with some customer support on somewhere far away offshore, and then your developers are somewhere else who might hear what your concerns are. So this is CodePlex. We've got SourceForge. We've got macOS Forge. We've got all sorts of different ways of getting this. Notice that they all have something in common. Like you've got issue tracker here and issues here. And you have tickets, which are similar to your issues. But then there's also things like get support and get involved. So plenty of options for finding support in your open source. And there's a myth that store packages don't have scheduled deliveries, they're not going to be released at a certain time, or maybe they're released and then they're not updated for a year and a half to 3 years later. A lot of people think open source is not professional delivery. And that is so far from true. If we take a look here, we've got things from CodePlex. So you can see here, it shows stable releases. It also shows whether there are releases that are coming that are in the queue and what stages they're in, if they're planning, if they're later on, if they're currently in progress. We've got VLC Media Player and SourceForge. We also have Git. So the Git repository, how many of you guys are familiar with Git? Good. So that's open source, and it's on GitHub. And so you can see here all the different releases that they have planned, and what they're working on and where they're at. And in this one here, you can see there are releases for VLC, and the last time they were modified. So we've got deliveries, number one, multiple, not just one that happens one every 2 years. Number two, you can see how consistent the package is getting updated. And number three, you can see, okay, not only have they updated this in the past, but they're still maintaining it with plans to grow in the future. And a lot of them have that roadmap to show, okay, this is the features we want to include in this upcoming release. And these features are nice to have, but we don't need them right away, so we'll put them on for something later, another future release. I've also heard that open source is this whole antisocial people and beards and sandals, and it's not ready for the big world. And it's just like, you look at this, which is a picture over at Times Square, and you're like, this just doesn't make sense. And people are saying, oh, big companies don't use open source software. Well, if you think back to the slides that I had earlier, you have big corporations who are contributing, so why wouldn't they be using this software? And honestly, people are using open source today. I mean, we've got things here such as DreamWorks and Industrial Light Magic. Both of those, they use open source tools, they create tools. NASA has their own, not only their own projects, but their own open source licensing as well. The Postal Service, Merrill Lynch, Amazon.com, InAccess, they all use open source in one form or another. I'm not seeing anything small about any of these companies listed here. So for them to say it's not ready for the big world, either these guys aren't part of the big world, or somebody's really wearing some blinders and saying, yeah. Or maybe their big world is actually real narrow, which is maybe they're not ready for the big world. Another myth is that open source products are inferior to commercial products. And every time I talk with my friends and when I talk to other corporations, especially back home in the Cleveland area, I talk with them and they're just like, yeah, they're like, well, we want to use such and such tool that costs so many $1,000s. We just can't afford it right now, but we want to do this. And they're like, well, have you looked at this open source equivalent? Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, it's open source. It can't compete with this. It can't be as powerful. I'm like, here's a proven study. I mean, if we take a look at things like, okay, there's QuickBooks for accounting, there's Microsoft Office. Oh, Microsoft Office. it's awesome. Then there's Oracle and SQL Server, DB2, commercial product, Adobe product. And then we get started on Adobe product. But we can replace all this stuff with open source equivalents that can compete with them, that can perform with them, that might someday outperform them or might currently outperform them, depending on how we use them. I mean, look at the stuff that's out there. Instead of using like Oracle or a SQL Server or a DB2, there's Postgres and MySQL. Instead of your QuickBooks, there's TurboCache. Instead of your Photoshop, there's Skin. There's Paint.net with their open source plugin. In terms of PDFs, there's something called Event, which is a great PDF reader. It doesn't have the bloat that the Adobe software has. OpenOffice is quite an acceptable replacement for Microsoft Office. If you can't afford the Office licensing, you can't figure out what the Office licensing is today, OpenOffice and their licenses might be better for you. Now, one thing to keep in mind, with the open source, and we'll talk a little bit more on the slide. Using your open source stuff in a commercial world especially, pay attention to the licenses to make sure that that particular package's license will be appropriate for what you need. Now, going down that road, let's say you're using a package, or you want to use a package in your corporation, but their open source license that they're using doesn't work with what you need, talk with the people who are maintaining the package. The reason why I say that is that I've run into some packages out there where they're wide open, but certain companies are like, this is an awesome package, but this is a little too open, a little too, it doesn't fit our corporate environment. It's like, okay, whatever. I'm like, but then you can see that they can also release it with a commercial license to appease the corporations. So if you find yourself in a company that kind of looks down on open source licensing or feels a little wishy-washy with it, talk with the maintainers to see if they also have a commercial license and how to handle that as well. There are options, but something you have to be aware of, at least in the commercial sense.
There's also a couple of companies that make a business out of vetting open source software for companies, making sure the licenses are all accessible to them, and then they can get the label checked for these systems.
Right. So for you guys in the back, the gentleman here mentioned that there are companies out there that will actually vet through and handle all the licensing and checking all that and dealing basically the middleman of the licensing world, making it a little bit easier for the end users. So those are the myths and the facts of open source. Kind of crazy so far. Again, I see more people filtering in. Not a lot of beards, not a lot of sandals. So just so you guys walk in and know, it's not just beards and sandals. There are more than just that. Because Linus doesn't have a beard, I can't grow a beard. Yeah. So the benefits of open source. One of the nice things that you can do with the open source world, because it's open source, you usually get access to the source. Being able to see the code, being able to see what the heck is going on under the covers. Going, okay, how can I fix this? How can I improve this? And if you're going to fix and improve it, commit it back into the community and actually contribute. The affordability. The software tends to be a lot more affordable than their alternatives in terms financially, in terms of performance, in terms of what you need to run in the background. This is quite affordable. Another thing is that you're not tied down. No, in this picture, that's actually an anchor in the ocean. There was no boat tied to it. So obviously there's a boat out there that's not tied down somewhere, but the anchor's still here. And we saw this was taken down in Outer Banks. But what's nice with open source is that you aren't tied down to a vendor. There are plenty of options out there. So if you find that maybe OpenOffice isn't working and you want some other Office suite, there are other options out there. It's a simple, open your favorite search engine and do a search for open source Office suite. And then there you're going to have all sorts of options to choose. Not sure which one to use? Take a look online at what other people are saying versus what you're doing and see what's applicable and go from there. Another benefit is interoperability. Again, when you have access to the source, it kind of helps you in figuring out, okay, how can I make this work with other things? So maybe you are working in a manufacturing shop, for example, and maybe you have an ERP system, so a way to track where things are throughout the shop. Maybe you're doing some costing or something like that. Maybe you're going to use OpenOffice. We'll use that again as the example with their spreadsheet. So maybe you need to pull in data from the ERP system. Because you've got the source, you can see how things are working, and you can write code to integrate with the ERP system a lot easier. Good luck trying to do that with Office. At that point, you're writing VBA scripts trying to make that happen. And having done both, it's a lot easier to look at it with the OpenOffice side of things. Another benefit is customizability. You'll find, and especially since as the open source movement has grown, There are a lot more ways you can customize an open source package for you. This screenshot here is for jQuery UI. How many of you guys are familiar with jQuery UI? But I'm still seeing hands. That means nobody's really given into that food coma right after lunch. Good job. But jQuery UI, what's nice about that is it's a library for web development dealing with different UI interactions. So you get like dragging and dropping, stuff like that. And it's got controls. It's got the ability to do widgets and themes. It's got its own core files. So let's say you're a web developer and you're like, well, I want to use all these different widgets and stuff, but I don't care about this draggable, droppable stuff. You can go to jQuery UI and say, okay, give me these widgets, but this draggable, droppable stuff, uncheck that, and then download your customized stuff. And you can do this with a lot of other open source projects where you're like, I want this feature, and not these features. That customizability is huge because you don't want to download code that you're going to have to redistribute that you don't care about. That's just going to bloat your program. Then there's the auditability. Again, being open source and being able to see what's going on under the covers, and with a lot of open source products being stored in repositories such as CodePlex or GitHub or SourceForge or whatever it is today, wherever you're at, there's going to be easier ways of tracking, okay, what's it doing, who changed it when, what did they do here? It's that transparency makes it even easier to audit and figure out how things are working. And it helps too with like an accounting package, for example, if you do come under an audit and you're like, well, my reports show this, you can go, okay, no, this report shows this, but that calculation was off, and here's why. And so you have that, whereas with a closed source, you're like, okay, I got to call into it and say, hey, can you guys tell me why this report isn't working? Because it's a standard report that they ship within QuickBooks, for example. Then there's the whole benefit of longevity with open source. Back in the day, people were just like, oh, open source packages, they have a couple releases and then they're going to die. There are so many packages out there nowadays that have been around for years upon years on end that there's people who can finally understand. Open source packages, more often than not, aren't these little one-off release things. They last longer. They go through a full life cycle and they're going to continue to be there. They're not just going to show up and then fall down off the stage or something like that. So open source packages, they do have that longevity nowadays. That A2 system with UNIVAC 1, if that's still around, that'd be for more. I'm just saying. Another benefit is actually quality. With open source, there are so many people I talk to who are not developers, so they don't get us. They don't get it. They don't understand that when it's open source and you're collaborating with people and you want the best to be delivered, you also want the best code to be out there. Because honestly, as developers, if you're writing crack code, the last thing you want to do is inherit that crack code back. You want to inherit nice code. So in an open source world, you really want to contribute decent code because somebody else is going to touch it and you kind of feel for them. Something else that you see in certain aspects is you see test-driven development. Anybody here developer-wise doing test-driven development? Okay, a couple hands. So with that, the way that process works is basically you write a test. So let's say that you need to do a certain feature in your application. You write the test. When you write the test, there's no code for what you're testing. You're initially saying, okay, this is the requirement of this feature. You run it, make sure it fails, which it should for the first time. Then you write the code to actually pass the test. And then you run the test again. Does it pass? Okay, fine. If it passes, it's a good thing, but is it optimized? So then you got to refactor it. It's called red-green refactoring. So this is that path that they go through. That's a lot of work, but I mean, if you think about it, you're actually studying what needs to get done and then meeting it. It's a process that people have adapted. You see this common now in the open source world. Having that kind of process, that kind of check and balance, quality of the stuff that you're getting is great. Then, of course, there's the whole benefit of licensing. Now, the benefit is also a headache to some. Because, I mean, what you see here, there's a lot of different symbols up there. A lot of different symbols, which means there are a lot of different open source licenses out there. Open source, asterisk, asterisk, open source, except, blah, all sorts of different licensing. It's crazy. I mean, you've got things that are maybe font specific, they're for academic general, they're for research, they require attribution, stuff like that. So the benefit is that there are so many licenses to choose from that you can use. But the headache, again, is also, there's so many licenses to choose from, how do you keep them all straight? And again, as this gentleman up front mentioned, there are companies out there who will be able to help you with that. So these are just some of the benefits to open source. It's a great thing to see. Now, in terms of open source packages, there are quite a bit out there. So those aren't open source packages. But what's nice is open source packages encompass all sorts of different things and available on all sorts of platforms. And the beauty of it now, watching from our college days to where we are today, back in college it was as simple as get a tarball, get a zip file of some sort, extract it, maybe compile it, and then deploy it to wherever you need it to. It was a lot of work at times. Nowadays, some packages may be like that, but now there's so many different package managers, be it for operating systems or for IDEs for programming, that you can just say, okay, hit this package, and bam, it installs. We don't have to do the unzipping, or sometimes we don't even have to do the downloading. It does the downloading for us, and then does the extraction, and then does the implement however needed. So we've come a long way with how packaging has gone. Some of the things that are out there in terms of open source packages are operating systems. So of course, our friends Linux, BSD, OpenSolaris, Android. There's a thing called Frida. There's something called Haiku. There are all sorts of operating systems that are out there currently nowadays that are open source. In terms of IP telephony, we've got SIP, we've got PBX packages. So either direction you want to go in terms of SIP is KubeCon, Jitsi, SFL phone, Empathy, and there used to be something called No Meeting. It's changed in terms of PBX. We've got Asterisk and a bunch of others. Call Butler, Cordial, Visium Switchbox. And speaking of, we will hear from Mark Spencer, probably about more about Asterisk and the Digium stuff tomorrow. There are open source file systems as well. So there are things such as ZFS, Starfish, WebDFS, there's something called Wandering HorseNet embedded file systems. These are just some of the file systems out there. So if you're looking for a particular file system that's open source, there are those. Of course, there are different office suites. And I love the pictures that I use for this include a word processing manual for something called a personal computer. Remember when that was a hot term? Not so much. And then there's also a pie chart here. The people who understand you can make statistics say whatever you want, and people who don't think twice about this chart. If you haven't seen survivingtheworld.net, that's where that chart comes from. But in terms of office suite, I mean, you've got OpenOffice and all sorts of other office suites. Nowadays, you can, if you don't want to download an office suite, you can just use like Google Apps or Microsoft Office has their WebEx or SkyDrive. So you've got those too, but in terms of open source, OpenOffice is one of them. And there are open source password keepers. Now this at first I was kind of nervous. I'm like, open source password keepers, so you mean open source password hackers? Store the software or store the passwords in the cloud that we created? No. It's nothing like that. And so the password keepers that are out there in terms of open source include KeyTap and KeyTap-S. But they will store your software or your passwords locally, and it's not send, and you can, again, because it's open source, you can look to see what it's doing. It's not going to send it to anybody. And of course, there are databases. If you think about databases store data, they store containers. They're basically containers of data, containers of whatever you want to hold, be it materials or whatnot. In terms of open source, we got MySQL, we got Postgres, SQLite. On the Windows side of things, there's something called Sterling. There's MongoDB, there's CouchDB, so the NoSQL databases. Open source. Plenty of options there. Content management systems. How many of you guys are dealing with websites with content management systems? All right, what are some of you guys using?
Drupal.
WordPress. Anybody else?
Another Drupal.
That's what I'm finding is a lot of people I talk to are in one of two camps. They're either in the Drupal camp or the WordPress camp. Occasionally we get that random third person who's like, what about Joomla? I used to use Joomla. I moved to WordPress because to me it was a lot more simple. A lot more just press the button and it works. You don't have to guess where things were. But those are a few of the options. There's also Orchard, which is a Windows-based CMS. There's something called Plague, something called Umbraco, Concrete 5, .NET Nuke. These are all content management systems, be it on the Linux platform or the Windows platform, but they're open source. So if you have a content management system that you're working with that you'd like to extend, maybe write a plugin for, you can see what the core is like, how to call certain things, and then expand it from there. And there are plenty of different guides online I've looked as well that will help you understand how things work to make it easier to extend those content management systems. I guess that's another beautiful thing, another thing that I forgot to include as a benefit is with them being open source, not only are they easy to see and understand, but then if you have access to the code, they're also extensible. Unless they're kind of that complex that you can make sense of it, in which case, but more often than not. Customer relations management. Anybody using open source CRM solutions right now? What are you using?
Sugar.
Yeah, Sugar's one of them. Anybody else? So we also have Splendid and Centric. So there are other open source ones as well, but Sugar is actually the top one on the list from everything I've talked with. Everybody I've talked to is like, we love Sugar. Is it easy to use?
I'm a computer scientist, so I think it's easy.
Okay. The computer scientist thinks Sugar CRM is easy to use. That's a good thing. I find it's usually good if we find it easy to use, because we tend to overthink things being the technical geeks that we are. Whereas if you have like your salespeople or marketing people using it, they're usually not as tech savvy as we are, and so it's one of those, okay, can they figure it out? That's a good thing too. Enterprise resource planning. Do we have anybody using open source ERP systems currently? Okay. So just so you're aware that there are open source ERP systems out there. There's something called ERP5, OpenPro, OpenMFG, OpenTap. These are just some of the ones out there. Choose your favorite search engine, do a search for enterprise resource planning, ERP, and open source, and you'll find other packages out there as well. This is having worked in a manufacturing firm, having to deal with custom reporting and stuff like that, having an open source package probably would have made life maintaining that a little bit easier, understanding what it's doing and how to make it work for our company. In terms of business intelligence, there's a package out there called Pentaho, which is open source. So if you're doing data mining, understanding how things are working for your company, doing BI stuff, that's one of the things. Web development. How many web developers out there? Yeah, like where are my brothers and sisters? There are more even. That's where I love working the most is on the website. So we're seeing open source growing more and more and more. Between jQuery, Amaya, Aptana, Mozilla SeaMonkey, MonoDevelop. These are just some of the tools that we can use that are open source. And it's nice if you just go to a website and say, okay, I want jQuery. And it's like, here's the source file. And oh yeah, here's the minify file. So you have the source if you really want to make changes to the core. And you get the minify that makes it a lot easier to deploy out. Anybody doing photo editing and graphics design? Okay, good to see the guy with the cameras doing photo editing. We need to make sure about that. There are plenty of open source packages out there to do photo editing and graphics, including GIMP, including Cinepink, Pixie Up, there's something called Picnic, something called Flash Up. So if you don't want to have to get another pirated version of Adobe Photoshop that fell off a truck somewhere, as many of us may have done in the past, I'm not saying where my truck was or anything like that. But no, there are alternatives to that. And you don't have to feel like you're doing something shady. I've used GIMP. I've used Paint.net also is out there. Yeah, you don't want to feel shady.
No, I just think it's great.
Yeah.
Pint is the open source version of Paint.net. It's very
simple. Yeah.
Pint.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how many open source packages there are for doing stuff like this. Where now I can actually feel like, okay, I gotta change this, fix the red eye on that. And this one I just happened to take a picture from when we were in Hong Kong and was changing when we were playing with Tiki Tone. And stuff like that. It's nice to just be able to do that and not go, all right, how much is it going to cost for a Photoshop license? I can't afford that, especially at the time of being a college kid. It's like, eh. But something like GIMP, something, it would be nice to play with these kind of tools, you know, that they're out there. But it's always nice to keep you honest about things. In terms of source control, no, because I've already taken enough polls. I know that we have quite a few developers out there. There are a lot of source control packages that are out there that are open source. Git, Subversion, Mercurial are the big ones. There's Bazaar, CVS, ECVS, Aegis, Fossil, just to name a few. So if you're not too sure which source control package will work for you, go online and research them. I'm not going to tell you I'm a fangirl for this one or a fangirl for that one. I've used multiple. They all to me work similarly enough that it's like, oh, this one has quirks, that one has quirks, but we all have quirks. It is what it is. So take a look and see which one is right for you. And in terms of virtualization, the open source package for virtualization is something called Xen. XDN.
KVM.
Yep. So there are virtualization packages that are open source that are available as well. And these are just some of the packages. This is a very small view of the packages that are out there. It goes back to the whole not big world thing. There's a huge world of open source packages out there. I only have a small view for this presentation because I only have a small amount of time. But if you do a search engine request for open source and type of software you're looking for, you're bound to find something for it. And if not, maybe you're that person who needs to create that package and start that urge of, hey, look, open source is available and this is an option and this is pretty cool. Because if it's not there and you start it and people see it, then there might be other developers out there like, well, he's working on this and I think I could help with that. And so then it'll start to gain a little bit more backing behind it. And in terms of open source projects, if you're wondering where to get them, besides using a package manager, check out any of these sites. They're alphabetical. There's no preference as to which one. I've used many of these, from Tigris, from SourceForge, Google Code, CodePlex, GitHub. And there are plenty of others. I'll make sure that we get these slides out to you guys in one form or another. But yeah, these are just some of the places you can find them. So hopefully this presentation has given you a bigger view of open source, a happier view of open source, maybe made you feel a little more comfortable that, hey, I don't have a beard and sandals. I'm turned off by that idea. It's not a little fringe movement. It's not a bunch of people who are working on it. It's corporations are not only working on it, they're embracing it. Everybody's using it. So hopefully you've got ideas that you can apply if you want to. Go forth and enjoy reaping the benefits of open source. If you have any questions at all, please feel free to ask. I will be here throughout today. I will also be around tomorrow. But feel free to ask away, and I'll do what I can to help you guys out. Otherwise, thank you. My name is Sarah Dukavich. Here, I'll bring the first slide back up. There it goes. So, that's my name. And the speakers for Linux Fest, if you guys haven't heard yet, there's a website called Speaker Bar. It's stkrbar.com. We will be posting our slides on there, so feel free to check that out. If you're on Twitter, pay attention to Ohio Linux or the hashtag Ohio Linux or Ohio Linux Fest. And you'll see speakers tweeting about things as well. If you need to reach me on Twitter, I'm Sadukie, S-A-D-U-K-I-E. But yeah, feel free to reach out to me as best if you can. Anything else?